Brandon and Lindsay and Farrell and Adam for leading us with music and worship. We're glad that you have joined us this morning. A few weeks ago, I was slouched on my couch in the apartment that we are in, and I was wondering, what is this weight that I'm feeling? It's uninvited. It seems to arrive unannounced, no matter which room I'm in. I was trying to figure out a way of describing it. The image I have, the way it looks to me, is a cloud, a dark cloud that just arrives and then it hovers. And it jumbles my thinking. And I feel it physically. And I realize I get emotional. How can we cope with our pandemic emotions? In February, Kimberly and I were in Italy. We were enjoying our time there. There were lots of sights to see. The streets were crowded. There was a certain energy level. There were a lot of young adults there studying. And then towards the end of February, things started to change drastically and rapidly. And the first major shift was that 15,000 foreign students that were going to school and studying there were recalled. And it just brought everything to a different level. And then public service announcements, and before long, there were travel papers that were required. And eventually, Kimberly and I evacuated out of Italy back to Canada. And the shops that we were in, the relationships that we were building, were gone. The rest that we needed and were still looking forward to was gone, and in its place was trauma. The plans that we had, the hopes that we had, we settled into our quarantine time here, but the routines that we had, they were different. They were gone. We couldn't spend time with people. We couldn't spend time with my parents. And as I was reflecting on this and trying to make sense of what I was feeling from time to time, I realized that what I was feeling was sadness. What I am feeling from time to time is grief. So how do we make sense of these pandemic emotions? Some of you are working right now during this time, and there's a lot of strain and stress with that. Processes and systems and protocols have been changing rapidly and frequently, and yet there's this sense that it's not the same, and will it be the same? Some of you are not working out of the house. You're now sort of forced to be in the house, and you're feeling the strain and stress of that, and young adults that are looking ahead, their future looks different, and there's a loss that is associated with that. And you're trying to figure out, children, how to shake out your sillies without going out. In many ways, we feel exiled. We do have nice houses and nice homes. We do have blankets and we have beds and we can put food on the table. But we are nonetheless banished. We are experiencing loss. And what we are feeling is grief. And that is common for human beings. It's common regardless of your age or your gender. It's common regardless of ethnicity or education or financial status. To feel grief when we experience loss. And yet at the same time, it's also deeply personal, because the way you experience loss and the way you feel grief is going to be different than the way I do, even in a case where we are experiencing the same event. And the interesting thing about grief is it shows up, it is active, and it manifests itself in different ways. We can feel disoriented, confused. There are times when we feel desolate, like we feel like we are on an island, so to speak, where a desert, where we feel alone. We can even feel anger. And it seems bad, because it is bad. You know, we can describe it as being in a room, in a sort of exile to a room that's cluttered. And you've lost something, you've lost many things, and you want to find those things that you've lost. And you want out of this room. But the thoughts that we have, the emotions that we have, are like they're cluttering our room even further. The thoughts and emotions are different sizes and different shapes, greater and smaller, and it's actually making the circumstance, the room that we're in, it's making it worse. The people of God throughout history have experienced this to varying degrees. Jacob and his sons, who were chosen and were designated as God's people, in 1800 BC, they left their homeland and they went to the land of Egypt for the sake of food. But it wasn't long before they were enslaved and brutalized in Egypt, and they lost their entire way of life. It was gone, and they were feeling desperate and desolate and angry. But then after a time, they reestablished themselves. They reestablished their lives. They reestablished the land. They built towns and cities. They rebuilt their families. But then they began to separate into these territories of north and south. And then in the middle of the 6th century B.C., they were again attacked by enemies, and now they were entirely decimated, killed or carted off into, again, this time they were dragged into the foreign land of Babylon. And they had lost everything, those that were still alive. And there was this intense, immense feeling of grief and disorientation. And what's interesting is the anger caused them to have a confusion about who the enemy was, and it confused and disoriented their understanding, their portrait of God. When Moses had gone on the Lord's request or Lord's direction, had gone to Israel, and he started talking with Pharaoh to release the people of Israel, and it wasn't happening. In Exodus 5, we read that Moses got upset with God and said, God, is this what you're trying to do, is punish the people of Israel? Then Jeremiah, at the time of the second exile where they were dragged into Babylon, listen to what Jeremiah, in the book of Lamentations, Jeremiah is giving voice to how the people are feeling. And he's describing this sense, this feeling of what God is like in Lamentations 2, verses 4. He has bent his bow like an enemy. He's talking about God. With his right hand set like a foe. and he has killed all who were delightful in our eyes, in the tent of the daughter of Zion. He has poured out his fury like fire. The Lord has become like an enemy. He has swallowed up Israel. And so there's this real sense that there's this confusion about what God is like. God is, maybe what happens is that in this grief that turns into anger, we get angry at God. But this confusion can also turn into our anger can be projected onto God, and we begin to think that God is angry with us in our grief. The prophet Isaiah, describing a rescuer, a Messiah, both in the time of his historic Jewish context when he was writing in, but also describing what we come to know later on as being a foretelling of Jesus. But in so describing it, Isaiah describes what is actually going on, but how humans, how we perceive it, confusing our portrait of the Lord. In Isaiah 53, and these might be familiar verses to you, but listen to what is actually said and written here. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his stripes, we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way. But the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall on him. And so in the midst of the grief and anguish, there's this disorientation and confusion about who is the enemy and what is God really like? Is God really capricious? Is he impulsive? Unreliable? Unpredictable? Or are we? So really what I'm zeroing in on here this morning is this question: how can we cope with our grief? And I want to tell you this morning that the Lord is gracious. And one way that he demonstrates this and acts on this is that he listens. The Lord listens, and when he listens, he opens up space for us to mourn, for us to groan, for us to lament. The book of Job is a book of heartache and hardship. There are 42 chapters. In 38 chapters, we do not hear from God at all. Job speaks, his friend speaks, and what is demonstrated and presented there is a God who opens up the space and is gracious and listens. And what I wonder, friends, is if a God who is listening for what amounts to all of these events in these 38 chapters, then in those last few chapters when he does speak, why is it that our inclination is to hear a God who is shouting? If he has waited all that time and been gracious all that time, could it be the weight of his words are impressive and immense? But could it be that he comes alongside Job? The book of Lamentations, written by Jeremiah, is a full book of lament. And friends, We do not hear God speak throughout the book. He gives space because he is gracious and he allows the groans. The book is actually, in Hebrew, it's called the book of how. The groan of how. And then there are the Psalms. There are 150 Psalms. I asked Angela this last week if she could do a bit of research for me, and she went through 150 Psalms. 51 of them are chapters, are completely a lament of a sort. 33 of them are a partial lament. 66 do not have any. Over half, 56%, of the Psalms are laments. The Lord is gracious, and he listens. The Lord sees, and he rescues. Exodus 3, 7 and 8. Then the Lord said, this is speaking to the people while they are exiled and trapped in Egypt. I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings. And I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey. Here's the difficulty. The difficulty is in God's timing. He seems to exercise a peculiar timing in comparison to ours. We try to compare God's timing to our timing, and it doesn't make sense. We can't quite comprehend. I think of the time even with Jesus. He had friends. He spent time with Lazarus and Mary and Martha. They spent time in their house. They ate together. And then he gets word that his friend is sick and near death. And what's so puzzling is he doesn't get on the mule and get over there right away. And Mary and Martha are also his friends. So the timing. And so when he does arrive, here then we see the way that God is working. He arrives and Martha comes out, his friend Martha comes out, and now his friend Lazarus is dead. And Martha comes out and she is grieving. And she comes out and talks to him. And then Mary, the sister, another friend of Jesus, comes out. And Mary also comes to Jesus. Listen to these words that Mary says. John chapter 11, verse 32. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. And Jesus wept. So the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he have opened up the eyes of the blind man? Also have kept this man from dying. And there's a glimpse, of course, that last part, a glimpse at the confusion that comes with grief. But this is beautiful in its mourning and in its grief because it is raw and it is real. Splayed out. And Jesus is there and he opens that space, but then he enters in and he's deeply moved, and the Lord Jesus weeps. He cries. He laments. So what's going on? What's going on in 1800 BC, 586 BC? What's going on in first century AD? What's going on in the 21st century? God's design and his plan when he created was he created life, and he created life, and his design was for people to have life, listen, abundantly. That was his plan and his desire. From the very beginning in the creation account in Genesis, be fruitful and multiply. In his conversation with Abram in the Abrahamic covenant, he says, I will make you exceedingly fruitful. Then Jeremiah, speaking the prophet again in the middle of that 6th century BC. I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for welfare and not calamity, to give you hope and a future. Jesus, speaking in John chapter 10 in his own words, says, a thief comes only to harm, steal, and destroy. But I have come that you would have life and have it abundantly. So when we speak about God's design and now understand his mission, when we speak about redeem, what redeem is to take something that's bad and to flip it into and make it into something that's good. And when we speak about a God who is restoring, we are talking about something when we have loss and he is restoring it back into life. So what I want to offer you this morning here on the question of how can we cope with our pandemic emotions, our pan-emos, is first to have a clear understanding of God. A clear understanding of who the enemy is and who God is and his character and his will and his mission. The loss of life and all that that means is awful, and it's contrary to God's desire and plan. It is not what he intends. So it makes sense that we would feel grief and sorrow. And that is shared with God. He has bound human being to him when he came as Jesus. And so those are divine emotions. And it is fitting and right when we have those kind of emotions, it is fitting and right to mourn and to lament and to grieve. And that too is a divine expression. The way rescue comes. So how can we cope? Understanding that those are divine emotions and divine expressions. Look at how God rescues. God rescues in the flesh. His rescue, his redemption, and his restoration is ultimately an embodied, a physical rescue. It is, in a word, it's a form of empathy. It is identifying with. And so what that means is that he is going through these difficulties with us. And when I say through, it means that he is with us and that there is also a resolution, a restoration on the other side of it. Psalm 23, though I go through the valley, he is with me. Isaiah 41:10, I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will uphold you. Surely I will help you and uphold you with my righteous right hand. Then Jesus, as he is finishing his conversation with the disciples in Matthew 28, verse 20, after he gives them instructions about discipleship and baptizing, he says, and I am with you, even to the end of this age. I'm going to pause here before I conclude with a few more thoughts. And I want to pause here to invite your questions and your queries. And you can do that by text or email to ask@semconline.com or in the comments. If you're watching by way of YouTube, you can write a comment there. And our service moderator is watching that ask@semc account and also the comments on YouTube. And if you have a question, something you want to interact with on this, I invite you to do that as we take a momentary pause here. And I'm just going to glance over and see if we have something that you wanted to ask. I hope that you're getting used to this idea query and question, a time to ask, a time for responding. If there's something on your mind that you're not sure about, that you want to dig into, lean into a little further, then this is a great time to ask your questions. We won't belabor this, but we wanted to give space for that. And in the coming weeks, we'll be doing more of this. And so even as I'm having the discussion and talking, if your question comes up, you can write that even as we go. There's some comments, but no questions. All right, maybe you will have some in the hours or days to come, and that's fine. So what do we do with this? I want to leave you with a couple of things. First of all, to be discerning of life and what is happening. The second thing I want to invite you into is to express your grief and your sorrow, to give space as the Lord gives space to groan, to give voice to what you're feeling. You know, when Kimberly and I were visiting in Kinshasa, we went to meet with John and Charity, and we went to the orphanage in Kinshasa, 30-some children. And Jacob and Kulem are the parents, they live with them. And we took time one day and we invited them to the orphans to tell us their stories of how they got there. And friends, the stories were just so difficult. You can't even imagine the horrors that these little children had gone through. And I remember Jacob being concerned that if they told their stories, it would lead to hysteria. If they told their stories, maybe it would get out of control. But after some conversation, we realized that no, they needed to tell their stories. They needed to give voice to the grief and the sadness and the difficulty that they were feeling. And so they would speak sometimes in Chokwe, sometimes in Lingala. Sometimes it would get over into French and then all the way over to English and all of these languages. But they were giving voice. And it wasn't long, friends, before Kimberly and I were outside with them on their front lawn, and we were playing games with them on the front of their OHE orphanage because they had been heard. and now we were part of the story, to give voice to your grief. The other thing I want to invite you, friends, is as a follower of Jesus, to be empathetic, to sit a while with someone who is feeling grief and sadness. Not to speak quickly. Don't dismiss or diminish by a get over it or a solution. Attend. It's a lot like that room, that cluttered room, where someone's lost something and they need to find it. And maybe you need to just acknowledge the things that are in that room. And maybe you need to do some sorting in order to get things a bit organized. And maybe you need to open up a window to let some air and some light in. And maybe you need to get some things out of the room. And that's what lament is doing. And maybe when you're sitting with somebody and you're attending and you're letting them and you're empathizing with them, you're sitting with them in their cluttered room. And maybe they invite you. Only when they invite you to say, can you give me a hand with this? And you begin to help them sort out so they can find a way. Next Sunday, we ask the question, how can we tell that this is if this is the beginning of the end? And we're going to investigate this pandemic and God's timing.